He is under pressure because this is Real Madrid. He's been removed once by an unhappy Florentino Perez. I think he's done exceptionally.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
8:35. We're turning to MMA and 10 days from now, so on the 29th of December, Will Flory will be in Prague where he'll take on the Czech superstar Carlos Vimola in an Octagon MMA light heavyweight title bout. There's going to be 20,000 fans at it, so it's Vimola's a superstar in the Czech Republic, and Will Flory is his next opponent. He's been looking for this fight for a long time, and Will is back on the show this morning. Good morning to you, Will. How are you?
Good, lads. How's things?
We should start with the elephant in the room. Since you've last been with us, you have failed a drug test and served a suspension. Can you talk to us about what happened?
So I think I can't remember exactly when I was in with you last, but I won a world title down in Abu Dhabi at middleweight, and I was really hoping to get into the UFC off the back of that. So I think I actually was in with you shortly after that I'd won the title, and I was kind of making a big push to get into UFC. So my management at the time thought, like, it won't be too hard to get you in. Then it turned out with the decision win, they won finishes. So I was looking for a decent contract anywhere I could get it. I got offered the chance to move up to light heavyweight to fight in the PFL. I initially refused because it was like light heavyweight to middle, like middleweight's 84 kilos, light heavyweight's 93. I trained with a good few light heavyweights like Carl Moore, Johnny Walker. They'd be like, at the time, they were much bigger lads than I was. And I just felt like, look, that's not my weight class. That's not where I'm at naturally. Like, and then they came back to me about 2 weeks later with a different offer to be like, look, here's what we'll do. We'll give you a fight against another middleweight, but you both weigh in at light heavyweight. Then you have 8 months to get to light heavyweight. And once you're in that, you're in the $1 million weight, or you're in the $1 million tournament every year. So they do that at light heavyweight every year. And the $1 million tournament's a pretty big chance. So, like, essentially, it was the opportunity to win the $1 million that I was like, well, fair enough. And I suppose the other side of it was, you're fairly aware that most of the other dudes in the tournament are going to be juiced up. It was pretty odd. Like, they'd signed a good few middleweights who were clearly going to have to put on a lot of bulk in the meantime. You know, it's an 8 month window to gain 10 kilos. So I went away, I had a talk with a few people that I'd be pretty close with who know the crack. And they're all like, look, it's not really an option here if you want to do this. And financially, I was just like, yeah, fuck it, this is a good chance. So, look, I did it. I fucking got caught pretty quickly. And so did my opponent. And so did the guy who I was about to fight. So the whole thing of like, all these other lads are juiced up proved to be correct. There was 10 guys in the tournament starting off. 6 guys got caught on the one night. But yeah, like, obviously got caught, served the ban, fucking didn't make any real money, like, you know, got fined, the balls out of it as well. And then they all got publicly released as well. Like, so like, what I found out since is like, most doping tests, even in MMA, and like within most sports, don't get fucking released. This obviously did. And yeah, it had a pretty fucking stark effect on the career and whatnot, you know.
Would you do it again?
Like, this is very, yeah. Like, I would try better to be a bit more, like, the transformation of my body was very obvious. So I would try to make it a bit more subtle, and I would obviously try harder to not get caught. But when you're coming into a situation where you know everybody else is doing something, and there's a, look, you know, it's not like it's not effective, it works, and it makes a big difference. And when guys are already skilled, like, I fought loads of lads who were definitely on steroids before this and didn't feel like I had to be because they weren't good fighters. I lost a fight in 2020 against a guy, like, and this was the thing, that was like a catch weight where I went up in weight because it was COVID, and I was like, gosh, it doesn't really matter anyway. And that guy was 100% on a lot of stuff, and like, I beat other guys in the past who were on stuff. That dude was very skilled and on a bunch of stuff, and it was like, I'm not entering that situation again, was how I felt at the time. So you asked me, would I do it again? I'd be a lot smarter about it if I was. But the answer isn't no. You know?
Yeah. It's there's loads to tease out, right? There's a general fear about doping in combat sports because it's already so dangerous, and now you kind of reach a stage where some people don't know their own strength. Was that a consideration for you?
Not really. Look, at this level, everybody's kind of aware of what damage they can, you know. You're probably well able to protect yourself. You're probably a robust enough individual from whatever you've been doing for a while. So you're not necessarily overly worried about hurting somebody else. That's not the primary concern. The primary concern is probably getting caught.
Okay. When did you...
Go on. See, the rhetoric of that plays out in a very different way. Like, and I understand how that seems to, like, you know, there's a lot of kind of, you know, emotional weight behind that to a normal person looking in at it. But when you've been involved in the thing for a long time, and like, again, like, I was very anti-steroid 10 years ago. And now I've kind of become obviously different, where you get sucked into a sport where it's fairly obvious everyone is, well, not everyone. And that's the key thing here, not everybody. But there's a large majority using some sort of performance enhancers. And again, I can't speak for other sports, but I do feel like it's a hell of a lot more common than people would like to admit. And even the, like, right, I get tested, I get outed publicly, you know, and it's skin off my nose. So it doesn't fucking hurt anyone other than me. In a team situation, the team have a vested interest in protecting you. And I think there's a lot of testing that goes on where the individual who might get caught is a lot more protected and a lot more, like, they're not sitting here doing an interview trying to justify why they took steroids to gain 10 kilos. And it's a lot more, and like, in a way, this is nearly, like, I want to be as open as possible about it to kind of try to at least illuminate the situation that it is. But at the same time, because of the general rhetoric, you're always going to be swimming against the tide in that situation. And again, I did what I fucking did. It's not right. It is cheating 100%. But you're asking me, would I do it again? Like, it's a complicated fucking situation. It is. There's no real, like, yes or no answer there. It's a bit more like, oh, it's a fucking, it's a big, dirty gray area.
When you started out, right, and you say 10 years ago, you would have been anti-steroid. When did the change begin? When did the penny drop for you that the sport was as riddled as you feel it is?
It wasn't a moment. Like, it wasn't like there was one day I was like, oh, wow. But over time, I suppose you were like, oh, that lad was probably on something. Like, guys I would have trained with in the past where I was like, he was very strong and he was very lean all the time. And he was, you know. And then you start to realize, like, you know, you kind of think, Ashton, once you're in this a few years, you'll be like that. And you're like, ah, actually, you won't. And you just notice guys can, yeah, like, over the years, you notice little things. And they're subtle enough at first. And then you're starting to kind of go, like, well, that's just not normal. Like, and again, like, it's a funny one because a lot of the grapplers, like, a lot of the BJJ guys now, they're much more open about what they're taking on it because, again, there's no, like, contact. It's like there's no striking in that sport.
When you say they're open about it, do you mean when you say they're open about what they're taking, this is like privately in the gyms?
No, but even like, say, some of the top grapplers in the world, like Craig Jones and Gordon Ryan and all these guys, and they'd be, you know, Craig Jones would be considered the second best grappler in the world, Gordon Ryan would be considered the best grappler in the world. They're pretty upfront about the fact that they're on steroids. And even from that point of view, it's kind of like, it's changed the culture a tiny bit within BJJ and MMA would be somewhat more closely associated. Obviously, within MMA, there's percent, like, you're working for a company, per se. So, you know, the promotion that you're representing, you're not going to fucking highlight the fact that you're taking anything for that. Like, whereas in jiu-jitsu, you're an independent contractor. And it's based off of your social media profile and all that type of thing. And it doesn't necessarily hurt your social media profile to put that out there. So the top grapplers in the world are all like, yeah, I'm taking something. And like, so many of them got caught at different tournaments over the years that they basically come over just like, yeah, of course. And that changed the culture slightly. So it became a slightly different thing over time then. But it's within MMA, it would still be very taboo.
Okay. So what when you and everybody else who's at that tournament gets caught, and retrospectively everybody goes, well, that makes sense, that people who were asked to put on 9 kilos in such a short period of time, when that comes out, what's the response from previous fighters, your friends? What does the industry say to you when they talk to you next?
It depends if you mean like the sport as a whole or the people around me. Because sure, people around me would have pretty much fucking known the crack. To an extent, like there would have been people who would be less aware and more aware. And, you know, not everybody around me would have known, but the vast majority would have seen a massive physical transformation. And yeah, just like I would have been quite open and honest with a lot of the people as well. Because look, there's friends of mine who would have been open and honest with me about what they were doing. So like, in that sense, you know, just a sort of a pity kind of a feeling. From the sport itself, like, you're kind of used as they're like, look, we're doing the testing. Look, you know, we're doing our best for clean sport. And you're kind of like nearly a tool in a way. So especially the fact, like, it became a big story because there was 6 guys caught on the one card. And they sort of used us as like an example of, hey, look how good our testing is. Because they got a load of guys from the UFC who had never been caught taking anything before, who all looked very similar to how they looked. So they kind of, like, Nevada Commission used that as like a, we're the gold standard of testing and whatever else. So I couldn't say the sport treated me. I like, there's not one culture within the sport where you're going to be treated a certain way because of it. So like, it varies a lot. Some people would be very nonchalant, not care at all. Some people, it's a total, don't, won't ever deal with you again type thing.
Can I go back, Will, when you started out, if you knew,
yeah.
Well, maybe it's the same question. If you knew now what you know then, would you have got into the sport or would you have doped from the start?
Oh, yeah, that's, I've gone away and thought about that a few times. And I love martial art, like, genuinely. Like, this is the reason I'm still doing the thing. Like, there's a genuine love for the sport itself and actually, like, becoming better at the sport and fighting and, like, the kind of the positions you have to put yourself in to be good at this. I think it's very good for your character in a lot of ways. So I wouldn't like to deny myself that. I don't know if I would be as enamored with professional fighting and prize fighting itself, but then if you're going to be heavily involved in this thing, you're going to have to make a living from it. So like, I don't know the answer to that, but I wish I'd known the crack when I was 21. Do you know what I mean? Like, I do look back and say, what decision would I have made if I knew this crack? Like, if I knew what this was going to be when I got into it. But there's a lot of things in life like that. So I'm not going to throw myself a little pity party and be like, oh, I didn't know it was this. Look, I fucking, from early enough on, you could see that there was something going on. And like, you know, I'm not some fucking saint. I went and did the fucking thing, you know. So like, I can't feel too sorry for myself. But yeah, like, that's kind of why I feel like it's important to be honest about this, because like a 21-year-old getting into this now can make a much more informed decision. Or like, you know, if I'm quite open about this, at least the guy coming along has a better idea what's actually going on. And I think that's the case with a lot of sports. Like, we're singling out MMA here and we're holding it up as an example. And yeah, look, it's not good. It's definitely fucking not an ideal situation. But like, there is testing. There are people getting caught. It's the same in most sports. You know, in other sports, it's not really released as much. So this isn't just MMA athletes who have to make this decision. This is most high contact sport professional athletes.
I'd say it's, so I think it's an important point to talk about. Definitely the other sports, there's a real sense they do a better job of covering it up. And I mean, the cyclists were always like, well, if you look at other sports, we're just the ones who are actually reporting it and talking about
it. Yeah. And even like the more I've become aware of, because even since the positive test, like, I started reading into a lot of other testing protocols and even like how the NFL test, how the NBA test, and all these type of things. Because you're looking at the guys and you're like, ah, come on. And there's a whole industry involved in protecting the sport and the kind of the image of the sport. And I think most people in all the crack would look at any, you know, anybody who's not a quarterback in the NFL and be like, here, look, come on.
There's also,
these guys are clearly on.
Well, there's also a tolerance. You get popped for something, you do a 4-game ban in the NFL, you get banned for 2 years or 4 years in athletics and cycling. And so we definitely, there's an expectation, I think, that in those sports in particular, that it's going to happen. I guess that was the moral question that I was asking earlier on about the fight game. And I think you rightly acknowledge that your answer will surprise people, because we look at it as so brutal. Like, the aim is to submit your opponent or to knock them out. It's are you any way worried about criminal ramifications if it came out in a fight that you knocked somebody out, that they could take a case afterwards, or that the authorities will step in at some point? Maybe, you know, there is a world in which the authorities do step in and say, okay, you did not enter this competition fairly.
That's genuinely never something that crossed my mind until you've asked this question. Like, I don't think, like, here's the thing, you know, if you're a professional high-level fighter getting involved in a fight with a guy like me or any other guy who's going to be at this sort of a level, you're well able to protect. Like, I can't see it being, it's not like I'm going out there and like picking a guy off the street and going like, hey, come on, me and you, let's go, and beating the crap out of the guy. So if someone wanted to, I don't even know how that works legally. And like, I knew going into that tournament that I'm not the only dude doing this. My opponent is most likely doing it. And that proved to be the case, you know. I don't know, like, you're talking about like hurting somebody as if we're like, we're going into a competition where like it's me versus a normal guy. That's not the case.
On the practicalities of it, was it straightforward for you to access and go on a program?
No, there was a lot of rigmarole going on there. Like I said, it wasn't anyway easy. There's like, the barriers are legit. Like,
that's, how are you? That's what's interesting to me, because what stood out a mile was how many of you were caught in the same, from the same kind of group. And I kind of wonder how sophisticated the taking was, because I suppose, I don't know, but I would assume that this, whatever goes into taking it, you're almost putting as much effort into not getting caught. So for so many people to get caught all at once would suggest that it's not necessarily the most sophisticated, or the testing was above what you'd expect.
I don't know which one it was, because it was the first, like, I did all my research on the internet, and a few, like, there was people who were also taking stuff, but I actually went and did everything off my own back as well, because you can't rely on some random lad telling you something, you know. So everything I got was off my own back, you know, it was all done through Bitcoin and on the internet and all this type of thing. But I thought, like, it was drosanolone that I ended up getting caught for, and I thought that was a 21-day window. So I came off like 25 days out, and that's what ended up, like, a metabolite of that was a longer acting test than I thought they had available. But otherwise, like, this is a mad thing. So, like, Chris Jocko, who was my opponent in that fight that we both got caught, he got done for Clomid, which is like an anti-estrogen. So it stops some of the excess testosterone converting to estrogen, and it also helps to like block some of your estrogen receptors. Anyway, that thing, it'd be a very long draw. Like, you know, it was something that I avoided because I was like reading quite a bit. I was like, well, that's going to be in your system for ages. I don't know if, like, he was in the UFC and he looked very similar in the UFC, as in his physique wasn't massively different. Now, he put on a few kilos, fair enough. But him, Thiago Santos, who was also in the UFC, and both of these guys looked the exact same as they were. Like, Thiago Santos was a light heavyweight in the UFC, and he actually went from middleweight to light heavyweight while he was in the UFC. So there's some interesting question marks around that. And, like, you know, they do apparently have the most robust testing But these lads were able to skirt that, and six guys got caught in one night who would all have been used to getting tested and didn't look massively different. And in a way, to me, that was a massive relief, because if I was the only dude caught, obviously it would look worse off your back, because, you know, now you have that argument of like, oh, you went in to hurt a guy because you were taking some steroids and he wasn't. It was like, well, no, that was never going to be the case. So was it more robust testing? I don't know, but like, they're an athletic commission, so they make money from catching you. Whereas if you're in the UFC and they're the ones actually providing testing, there's no financial incentive to catch you.
That is a very interesting wrinkle in the whole system as well. Who you pay to do and how they are run as a business. When you were doing your research to decide what to take, how did you end up on what you ended up picking?
It seemed like the kind of least likely to cause major interference with the rest of your body. Like, again, you're introducing hormones, so your genetics are going to dictate how these things affect you a little bit too. And like, even there's a lot of factors involved, but like,
so sorry, what did you take? Was it a human growth hormone you took?
No. So it was testosterone, drostanolone, and at one stage primobolan as well, but I never got caught for the primobolan. It was the testosterone, the drostanolone, and they were massively effective. As in, like, this is the thing, I haven't played around with too many formal answers, but these, it was just like, whoa, this works
straight away. Can you get a vial that arrives to your house by courier, or you pick up at a Dropbox somewhere, and then you just start injecting? What's the sequence, and how often do you have to do it?
Depends on like the ester that you're taking. So like, there's different oils and there's different lengths of time that all of those will be. There's like, they call them half-lives. So like, you know, the half-life of the drug will dictate how often you take it. And like, I think for me, it was every third day at one stage. Now, again, you could go longer and you could like take slightly bigger dosages and have it. But if you want to keep your levels as stable as possible, it was every 3 days for me. And that was for a period of about nearly 5 months. And during that period of time, I gained a massive amount of weight. It was all lean body mass. And like, it was very, like, you noticed just like after a period of time, because again, it takes a while for your body to start to adjust to it and get kind of used to it. But you're just like, I can train like an absolute horse. I can go and, you know, I could do 3 sessions in a day and not like, you know, doing that as a normal athlete. You're getting out of bed like, oh God, you know, especially after 2 or 3 days of that, you're extremely fatigued. Doing that as an, like, this testosterone in the body, you recover so much faster. And the benefit from training is there. So like, say if I was doing that as a normal athlete, plenty of times I'd be recording my figures throughout the camp. And, you know, you'd start to notice you're actually diminishing rather than build, like, your strength, you're getting weaker throughout the camp. You know, you're like, your numbers are going slightly down at times because you're just overtrained and you're trying to get a skill benefit more than you're getting an athletic benefit, if you get me. So it's like your timing's getting better, your whatever, but like overall raw power is not getting better. It's actually disimproving throughout the camp. Whereas obviously once you're on, and plus you're gaining weight as well, so there's that. But like, your training becomes a hell of a lot more effective.
Were there negative side effects?
Yeah, sort of. Like, again, I was very conservative with what I went and did. Like, I wasn't on any crazy stuff or anything like that. So, like, a lot of the sort of, like, roid rage type stuff you see, it's guys taking quite strong things that are going to mass. Like, again, like, it's a hormone. It 100% has an effect on behavior. There's no two ways about that. Any young lad starting it who thinks it won't, no, it will. It will affect your behavior. But again, how much is hard to say, because you don't know how you would feel if you hadn't taken something, if you know what I mean. And it's not like a stark difference. I think your character stays very similar. So like, you know, and I was 33 years old before I ever started taking anything. So like, you're fairly set as who you are, if you know what I mean. And I didn't feel massively different. I just felt like I have a lot more energy to train and to do things. But like a little bit of back acne, things like that. Nothing, no significant side effect in my eyes anyway.
Are you worried about it having a medium-term impact on your health?
Yeah. like the real, by far the biggest thing would be the, you know, effect on your arteries, your cholesterol, that type of thing. So like your heart health and the possible, like the significant increase in the risk of having a stroke in your 50s and 60s, you know, that would be the real actual, like, you know, you see these PBS after school specials about what steroids are and you're like, ah, like, look, having being a guy who's interacted with that, that's not the case, you know, unless you're really unreasonable with what you're going and doing. And look, again, look around any gym in the country, like there's fairly clearly quite a hell of, you know, like if I'd wanted to do this without going on the internet, I definitely could have done it that way. But I would trust the internet more than I trust some bro in a gym, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like there is a significant, like that risk is not insignificant. Look at the amount of bodybuilders who've died in their 50s, 60s. And again, I'm not doing bodybuilder type stuff, or I wasn't doing bodybuilder type stuff. It's more, you know, you're still increasing the risk here.
With that worry that you'll, I guess, carry with you now for the next 20 years and you'll need regular checkups to make sure that everything's all right.
Yeah, to an extent. Like, look, again, I feel like if I was drinking heavily or smoking, I'm probably being a lot, you know, there'd be a bigger health risk from those even. And I'm not trying to diminish it. No, it's a significant risk.
But it's interesting to hear the conversations that are happening, like, and how you're living with it, right? Because I wonder, is there a psychological toll at some point when you look back and think of yourself as somebody who had felt like they had to make this decision to continue in the sport?
Yeah, it's definitely not who you set out to be, if you know what I mean. So, like, you don't see yourself as a 21-year-old want to be this guy. But I'm still pretty proud of who I am and comfortable with what I've done in it. And again, like, that's why you're asking me, you're saying, like, oh, would you do it all? Like, would you do it again if you knew what you know now? Like, I was who I was then because I was following this path of trying to be who I wanted to be. And that guy made this decision. So I have to stand by that, be like, well, yeah, you did it then, knowing what you know now. And the real, like, you can't throw yourself a pity party because you got caught, suffer consequences. You made that decision at the time.
It's I think this is the crux of it, really. It's like, it's not necessarily a pity party. There is an opportunity now for you and your generation to say this sport is a bit rotten and it is actually corrupting the dreams of the 21-year-old me.
See, yeah, the thing I have an issue with there is this sport. I would say professional sport with any level of contact is a little bit rotten. And here, cycling doesn't have contact. You know, there's a lot of sports out there where this is a factor, this is real. It's just like, you're an independent contractor and you're the one who can get burned here. So that's why I'm sitting here doing this interview. If I was part of the, like, you know, the Falcons or the Giants or something, I'm not, you're never getting to me like this. There's never an open and honest conversation about this. Or like, you know, if you play for fucking Bath or you play for whoever, you're protected. You're a vested interest in the team now. You have financial incentive to not, like, a lot of people don't want you speaking publicly about this. So it's just never going to happen.
Yeah.
So you're saying, but like, here's the thing. This is why I got a little bit salty here, because it's like MMA. And MMA obviously has enough bad press already. And like, especially in the mainstream media, where it's like, you know, everything is, you feel like there's a rhetoric around the sport that's just such an unhealthy thing. And you're like, I go into gyms every day and I wish some of the journalists who go, you know, attacking the sport, they're attacking the Saturday night guy. So you're like, you know, you're taking the guy you see on Saturday night, you're saying, oh, well, he's a crazy character. Look at him. And like, oh, look, Will Fleury's taking steroids and he's going out there and hurting people. It's like, right, but here's what this actually is. This is a collection of weirdos who didn't fucking really fit in any other part of society, who are doing their best to make it in this thing. And like, the vast majority are young lads who are fucking pursuing it. Like, they're trying to, I suppose, give themselves something where they can like have a level of discipline and buy into that and buy, like, have a level of confidence out of that. And that's the vast majority what the sport in this country actually is. If you walk into a gym, it's some misfit 18-year-old who's trying to better to like fit in and have a level of confidence. And you're like,
so I buy that, right?
You know,
I buy that, right? And I guess that's what I'm asking about you doing these interviews, is actually a chance for you to help that kid not to have to make the
decision.
That's
why we're here.
And like, so it's not your job to fix the Falcons or the Giants or any of those other teams. And but you do potentially have a role here in Irish MMA as someone who says, like, certainly everybody's going to have their eyes open having heard this. And I wonder what comes next for you in those terms. Like, what after this fight? I mean, after this fight, if you win, I guess it's a career changer. And if you lose, I don't know, are you close to the end? I'm not sure. We didn't even get into that part of it. But your role as someone who can talk to kids about the choices that are coming, as opposed to someone who can coach them not to get caught, because that's the other side of this, is like, I'm sure there will be people like...
See, there isn't that, like, this thing, as in, like, it'd be very misleading for me to say, like, oh, there's a whole... And again, I've been in a few different gyms, but genuinely, in any of those gyms, it's not something that's openly discussed or talked about. Like, I have a bunch of light heavyweight training partners, so I do have people I can talk to, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's no, like... talk about that sort of thing on the mats. There's nothing where this is like an open, obvious thing. Like, now, because I've been caught, guys will joke with me about, you know, I fucking, but like, there's a bit of banter around the whole thing. Like, so it's a different situation there. But like, it's not like some 18-year-olds coming in and being like, how can I juice up to their coach? I don't think that's, well, I can't speak for every gym in the country, but I don't think that's taking place at all. Like, you know, I don't think that's something that's happening on a regular basis. As well, it's more like, I have been caught. I'm publicly open, like, you know, it's very out there. So if some lad wants to listen to this interview and come along, be like, and even again, like, look, that it's genuinely at me a shitload where like, I'll have 22-year-olds coming to me being like, what do I need to take? And I'm like, nothing. Don't even think about that until you're making legit money and you're 25, 26 years old. Like, you know, so that's happened, but like, that's a private conversation rather than this. But like, yeah, I don't know.
You're a heavy underdog for this fight. Is that fair? This guy's a Czech legend.
No, I'm not, like, so they think he's unbelievable. I'm the betting favorite,
right?
But you wouldn't think so. Listen to the runner coming out around it. Yeah, I started off as like a slight underdog, and then. Now, this is the Czech Republic Tip Sport. They're their like main sponsor. So like, you can track how much money's been put on you. There's about four times as much cash gone in on me. So I'm like a decent enough favorite at this stage. Look, given the way I've gone out and performed in my last few fights, I think it's like, I'll be very disappointed if I don't knock this guy out fairly early on. He's very open. He's a very experienced fighter. He's a good fighter. Like, Carlos Formolo is his name. He's a massive star in the Czech Republic. They consider him a great fighter. If you look on the Instagram comments, you'd think like, oh, Will's absolutely screwed going into this one. This guy's an animal. He's not very technically good. He makes a lot of fairly basic mistakes. And he hasn't changed his game in the last 10 years. He hasn't really evolved with the sport. So I'd be very confident to the fact that I can catch him coming in. He's very sloppy with his entries. And I'm kind of expecting a fairly emphatic finish in the first or second round.
It's 10 days out, so I'm sure everybody who's watching this morning will definitely be casting an eye on the 29th to see what happens. I can't say anything other than thanks a million for your honesty and openness this morning, and we wish you the best with whatever comes next, Will.
Cheers, thanks, William. Like, the fight's available on The Zone, and it's on Octagon.tv as well. And as well, like, look, the... I suppose the positive side of all of this is I've managed to resurrect a career out of this, and I'm in with a decent promotion like Octagon now, who are doing massive shows in Central Europe. I just fought in front of 60,000 people in October. That was an incredible event. I went in and finished the guy with the first round KO. You know, this is not like, we've come on here and it's very somber buzz now because it's like, oh, well, look, this happened 2 years ago. We're just talking about it this morning. There's a positive note to all of this, in the fact that I've managed to fucking actually salvage something out of this. And it's now in there with a promotion who are doing fairly incredible work over in the likes of Germany and Czech Republic and all around Central Europe there. So I go on and win this title, and there is a huge opportunity. and there's massive opportunities afterwards. And yeah, like you're saying, what if you lose? Hasn't even really occurred to me, to be honest. And again, that's probably the bluster that you need going into a fight like this. But I'm back. I'm like, I've gone and done incredible things this year. You know, I went and fought with a broken hand in April, like a badly broken hand after coming back. Like I was sparring with Sean Strickland in Las Vegas and broke my hand fairly badly. I'm coming back off of that buzz now and like won that fight with the badly broken hand, which was a mad thing to do in itself. But like, that's the nature of this sport sometimes. And that, like, you know, we're talking about all the very negative aspects to it. Like the level of kind of, I suppose, relief would have been the main emotion, but the level of like self-belief that you get off of something like that and your kind of your ability to show yourself what you're actually about when the chips are down. And again, coming back, like that was my first fight since the ban as well. So like overall, I feel like this has been an extremely positive year, even given what happened in 2023. And I'm very proud of that. And I'm very like determined to make the absolute best of the situation I have left. And you're saying you're 35 years old. Jesus, the guy I'm fighting is 39. And most of the, like, look, Alex Pereira's come in as a 37-year-old and absolutely smashed everyone in the UFC, and he's a light heavyweight as well. At this weight class, you seem to kind of just age a lot, but, like, you know, there are guys out there who are, like, Glover Teixeira was a champion while he was 42 years old, and that's at the highest level that's been in the UFC. So there's still a lot of things that are quite possible, and I'm very determined to make those things reality.
So there's another act to come.
Yeah, in my eyes, definitely. Well, and like I'm putting the work in to do that, and I'm like looking to me, right. Cheers, lads. Thanks for the time.
I know. Thanks so much for joining us. Cheers. It's Will Flory there on that fight is in 10 days' time. If you want to get in touch,
off the ball breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
He is under pressure because this is Real Madrid. He's been removed once by an unhappy Florentino Perez. I think he's done exceptionally.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.